This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program LA Kings reporter John Rosen. John, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Yeah, thank you so much. Always pleasure to join you and a fan of the show. So great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Kings-Jets matchup later on tonight in Los Angeles. Yesterday was not a great performance by the LA Kings in San Jose, losing 4-1 to the Sharks, a game where they were down 4-0 after 40 minutes. You know, this Kings team, I think nobody expected them to be, you know, a playoff team by any stretch, but they sit at the bottom of the Western Conference right now. You know, is there disappointment internally with the performance of the team so far this season?
No, not really. They've been playing pretty well. This has been their best stretch of hockey this season. They entered that game in San Jose 5-2-1 in their last game. Jonathan Quick's game had turned around pretty well, and then last night they didn't get really their legs going much at all. They lost important moments of the game. Jonathan Quick, for the first time in November, really had an off night. You do those things, you don't win in San Jose. So, the Kings team that there's going to be a talent and skill discrepancy, with virtually any opponent that they face. So they're going to have that type of will, resolve, good work ethic. And they've largely had that. Like, structurally, they look fine. The expected goals percentage, the shot-based, attempt-based, chance-based metrics are all very healthy for this Kings team. But they don't have enough, real skill, finishing ability to take really good advantage of it. And so they'll go through stretches like they're in right now, or if their goaltending is good, they're going to put themselves in the chance to win every single night. They've beaten some good teams recently, like the New York Islanders, back on Wednesday. So it's a work in progress. There's good key players that there were big question marks about going into the year that have had some degree of positivity in their game, ranging from Quick, whose numbers aren't very good and wasn't good yesterday but has been playing well, to someone like Jeff Carter, who's been among their better forwards this year. So I guess that's my, 3 or 4 minute way of answering that question. Hope you don't mind the extended soliloquy there. But it's a complex team. They're not that great, but they work hard, and structurally they're pretty good under Todd McClellan.
Yeah, we'd rather our guests talk than us. It makes our lives a lot easier. So feel free to soliloquy all you want there, John.
No problem.
You know what? It's great because, we get to work with Todd, too, this year. And we say this about the Jets, reporters and Jets media, that being able to work with Paul Maurice would make your job interesting, fun. And the same goes for Todd McClellan. So great people who teach you a lot about the game.
John, we want to get to, the players that are currently playing for the Kings and excelling, the usual suspects, Andre Kopitar, Drew Doughty, you mentioned Jeff Carter, but, I have to ask you about Ilya Kovalchuk. He's obviously not practicing with the team. He's not playing in games. Is the expectation that he's going to go back to the KHL? And where did this all go wrong? Because when the Kings signed him to that 3-year deal, it's not like they gave him a small amount of money. It was a pretty big contract. Where did this all fall apart?
I can't point it to any one specific, nexus of discontent or something gone askew, but he has been practicing. He traveled with a team yesterday to San Jose. He's been skating with them. He's just been, essentially, as Rob Blake said, a healthy scratch, but we're not expecting him to play again for the LA Kings. The thing that looms above everything else is that if he were to leave without being traded, without something else, there would be that $6.25 million, 35-plus cap hit for next year that the Kings would not be able to remove. So that's where, the discussions, the negotiations, are largely to see if, A, there is a trade partner for the LA Kings, because last year there were teams that showed, again, some degree of interest in Ilya Kovalchuk. But right now, I don't know if that is the route that they're going to go. I can't really speculate on what will happen, you know, just beyond today. And we're not expecting him to play tonight. And again, we're not expecting him to play, you know, again for the LA Kings team. But with Kovalchuk, I think coming back this year, all parties wanted that that real open mind, and you know that Kovalchuk ready to come back play for Todd McClellan, and showed a very, very good. Demonstrated a great work ethic in several games early in the season, but it wasn't scoring at a rate to offset, you know, the structural inconsistencies in his game. And so as a result, was not playing with the types of players that I think the Kings had set out to play him with when they signed him. And again, you know, hearing from what I was hearing, you know, it just sounded like a, you know, a failed, I don't want to say experiment. It was one way that it was described to me. I don't know if I wouldn't say experiment. I mean, both sides wanted this to work, and it was something that was intended to, you know, prolong this, you know, what the team had perceived to be their window without having to exchange assets in the form of prospects or players. So it didn't work out for the Kings, and it's difficult right now. They're not expecting to be a team that is going to be obviously a Stanley Cup contending team next year, but in their projections, the more positive ones, were next year was the year that they wanted to take a step and contend for a playoff spot. So that would be a challenge to have a work through a $6.25 million empty cap hit.
You know, John, 6 games ago, Jeff Carter hit his 1,000th game. He's played 9 seasons now with the Kings. He seems to be having a bit of a rejuvenated year. He's got 8 goals. He only had 13 in 76 games last year. He has 8 and 26 this year. So what have you seen from him, from this veteran forward, that he's managed to turn things around this season?
Moving around well, good energy, confidence in his game. There's the, you know, the, I think just the dial in that everybody had this year that wasn't there last year. As you know, not only, you know, was there a coaching change, and it went, you know, really went south, you know, as the season progressed under Willie Desjardins, and the team was not happy. But even at the very start of the season, while it was still with John Stevens, you know, I think that the, you know, outside observations that have said that it was getting a little bit too comfortable for the players, you know, I think that's all pretty accurate. And he's somebody that I think is dialed in. He's moving very well. And it's showing that he has been able to move past the injury that, you know, that took him out for 55 games in the 2017-18 season. He will move between center and left wing, in the game tonight. So with, you know, with his ability to get around better this year, he's been better in the center of the ice. He's been somebody that has played a good physical game recently with Matthew Barzal, with the New York Islanders recently in town, and also did a good job on Connor McDavid in the Kings' 5-1 win over Edmonton recently. So there are good physical, defensive, smart parts of his game that were always kind of a part of his game that were there, and he's adding some nice scoring as well to that right now that he's shown in the past. He's got 8 goals coming into today's game, so well above last year's pace.
John Rosen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is a reporter for the Los Angeles Kings. This, you're part, listening to the, as we're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Kings later on tonight from Los Angeles. John, you look at the Kings roster, and it's fairly clear that they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline, which is, of course, a few months away. You know, they have 3 veteran forwards who are all going to be pending UFAs, Tyler Toffoli, Trevor Lewis, and Kyle Clifford. You know, of those three, which one do you anticipate is going to get the most action on the trade market?
Tyler Toffoli, and I would expect him to be somebody that, that ends the year in a different uniform, playing for a playoff team this coming spring. Toffoli is somebody that I think he has the good numbers, he has the good metrics, there are good things about his game, the fact that he plays pucks well off the board, that he makes very good little hands plays entering the zone. He's one of the, you know, the players on the team that does have that finishing ability and does have some inherent skill, you know, in his game and playmaking ability, but it just hasn't transferred regularly over into the, you know, to the score sheet. Of course, this is a Kings team where the, you know, the rising tide has not lifted all boats, and the offense and the power play has struggled, so that depresses his numbers a little bit. But he's somebody that would be due for a good spike in the second half, has shown aptitude in the playoffs. He would be the most likely, and you know, the question is, what would the Kings be able to get in return? They're hoping that he could be somebody that could go on a little bit of a run. You know, at this point, Would not look like you would be able to get a first-round draft pick for him. I think the going rate as of recently was a second-round pick plus a prospect, but that's you know, largely, you know, speculative and you know, based on, you know, what the market was for those types of players last year. So interesting to see player that has that ability, and you know, I think looking at the other guys as well, Trevor Lewis, Kyle Clifford, obviously, you know, like Toffoli, also, you know, ingrained team leaders. I would think that Kyle Clifford would be the most likely of that group that they would be able to, you know, either bring within contract for this coming year. You know, I think that would probably be the most realistic option for upcoming seasons.
John, wanted to move from, you know, some more of the veteran players to some of the younger players, and I wanted to ask you about Blake Lizotte, because Lizotte is from, you know, just north of Minneapolis. I actually looked it up. He's from Lindstrom, Minnesota, which is population 4,442, which is about 7.5 hour drive from us here in Winnipeg. You know, he recently scored his first NHL goal. This guy's undrafted. He's listed at just 5'7". How nice of a story has it been? And is that kind of what this year is about for the Kings? You know, the younger players, guys like Adrian Kempe, Austin Wagner, you know, just them getting some more NHL experience and developing in the NHL. Because as you mentioned, the Kings are not expecting to be a Stanley Cup contender this year.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, Todd McClellan said that this would be a Kings season that would be judged on by its growth. And players like Lizotte and players like Adrian Kempe, the exact ones that you mentioned, are those that, you know, they're going to take stock of what they have and use that and apply that to, you know, future seasons when they have the, you know, the kids like Alex Turcotte, potentially Gabe Vilardi, who is playing again, you know, Akil Thomas, who's having a tremendous year, Arthur Kaliev, and those high-end, but, you know, obviously not, you know, Patrick Laine-type prospects where you're drafting first or second, you know, in an NHL draft. So it's so important with this Kings team because, you know, they want to build around Kopitar. They want to build around Doughty, and that, you know, they still see their success years into the future. It's important for them to be able to find those NCAA college free agents, and Lizotte was somebody that signed with the Kings out of St. Cloud State after his sophomore season rather than his junior year. Was not expected to come out of college. Several other teams gave him a pretty good run. Minnesota, another team that was there, hot on his tail as well. But just a good, playing that modern style of game, gets pucks back, wins those little 10, 12-foot battles, can play against, you know, bigger skaters. He had a good time actually with Klein battling against, you know, Joe Thornton at times yesterday. And is somebody that is, you know, the offense is I don't want to say secondary because the Kings need to improve that, but still somebody that if he's not scoring is, you know, very much like a pest. And, you know, the saying goes that Trent Yanni referred to him as a mosquito in a dark tent. The Kings broadcast started calling him Peter recently. So just somebody that's always there on the puck, pesky, and, you know, with that type of checking and the way that he plays, you know, he can add a little bit of offense. It's interesting. I mean, you look at players like Max Verano, who's been, you know, up and down with Ottawa, other types of NCAA college free agents that haven't quite been on that same wavelength. But Lizotte has found a really good home, and he doesn't look like he's somebody, especially with the King center depth, that's going to be coming out of the lineup.
You know, John, in terms of doing that retool where you have those, you know, you have those young pieces that are coming into the lineup, you still have those core veterans that you plan to build upon. How do you sell that message? Like, how do guys like Drew Doughty accept the idea that they're not necessarily going to be a contender? Because we know how important winning is for Drew Doughty. He's a very vocal player. But so how do you sell that to him, that it's going to be another year of growth before we may be back into contention?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't really have an answer to that. I think that was a challenge. I mean, that was the underlying challenge for a lot of those players last year, and it was certainly a challenge for Doughty, who was not at his best last year and is still not at his best right now this year as well. So, you know, I don't know if you would give them that great of a grade thus far to this point. But I think when you ask the players about that, and this was what Jonathan Quick said after a recent game in Toronto, where, you know, they don't want to hear about the veterans, the kids. This is a team. This is a team we're losing. You know, obviously when you're a player, you're not always, I don't want to say able, but you're not focusing on, you know, the forest rather than the trees and the game that you just played. But, you know, they see themselves as one unit. They don't want to be defined by veterans and, you know, and kids. And it's a less cliquish team in that regard as well. So, just interesting. it's hard, it's difficult, but they have that type of leadership, you know, beyond guys like Kopitar, the Dustin Browns, Jeff Carter is good in that regard as well, the Kyle Cliffords and why he's so important to this group. And that's something that they're going to be missing with Alec Martinez out. You know, he's going to be out for the next several weeks, you know, after undergoing surgery to repair nerves and an artery in his wrist. That's something that's going to be missing. And, you know, yesterday in a game where they just didn't have a ton of life against San Jose, that was, you know, an impact in the game.
John Rosen covers the Los Angeles Kings. You can read more of his work at LAKingsInsider.com.
Hold on, aren't we going to get into UMichigan football
that's
here with John?
I'm about to ask him about.
Let's get into this
it's
here.
It's 9 minutes away from kickoff there, John. Can the Maize and Blue win it this year?
Yeah, they can. They can. I don't know if they're going to. In fact, I don't think they will. Ohio State, I don't see too many weaknesses, you know, where barring something unforeseen or an injury or some sort of, you know, it's really hard to visualize the type of win. Shea Patterson can continue to throw the ball like he's been throwing it these last two or three weeks, they'll be fine. But, you know, I look at that secondary. I look at what Chase Young's about to do. And, you know, I suppose I'll watch this game again, but it's getting old at this point.
if you need anything to hang your hat on, John, the blue and gold of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers won the Grey Cup last week, and the Michigan Wolverines are sort of blue and gold as well. Yeah. So maybe there's something in the colors that'll propel them to victory.
I'm going to anger so many people here in saying that I am a hardcore watermelon head, all about the Rough Riders.
Oh, John.
So no.
I am.
Cut him off.
You know,
this is a bad take, John.
Great Cup around, what was it, 2009, 2010, glory years. Those were my Darian Durant and Chris Getzlaf. Those were, sorry about that. I'm just going to stop right now.
Hold on. Don't you mean Zach Kolaros and Chris Streveler Matt Dunnigan?
I was going to say I'm going to cheer for Michigan, but now I'm cheering Ohio State. No questions asked, John.
All good.
We'll let you enjoy that game, and then, of course, the Jets and the Kings later on tonight in Los Angeles. John Rosen covers the Kings for LAKingsInsider.com. John, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
Take care, John. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Kings. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
In for Andre Kopitar off the arm and scores. Andre Kopitar with a great net drive on the power play, and the Kings have regained the lead.
Back in October, when the Kings came into Bell MTS Place and defeated the Jets, Anze Kopitar with the game-winning goal in
that
contest.
Did you say Anze or Anze?
I just said Anze, but I meant to say Anze, so it was sort of wrong on many different levels, but I do thank you for pointing that out so very well. Why don't you eat another gummy on air while crumpling up the plastic bag? Everybody loves listening to that.
I'm just trying to enjoy a little snack. I need a little sustenance.
Yeah, you need a little
sugar.
I mean,
we're on air here for 3 hours. I need to nibble on something.
I appreciate that you brought me wine.
I try to eat
gums.
Them during the break, but once in a while, you know, when I'm listening to John Rosen's comments, I like to have a little nosh.
You get a little famished, I understand. I appreciate you bringing me my favorite wine gums, so I can't really complain too much.
I didn't really bring them for you. I mainly brought them for Dave and Sean. But
well, I've been eating them, so in any event, I appreciate it. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show, speaking of food, brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve sandwich, which I could really go for right now. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and has been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekday and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So these two teams have sort of gone I wouldn't say even in opposite directions, but the Jets have certainly played better hockey as of late since that defeat to the LA Kings, and the Kings have sort of been the same sort of average to middling team at the bottom of the Western Conference. I think this is another contest tonight for the Jets where it's important to get out to an early lead. You have a Kings team that's not playing, you know, they lost last night to San Jose. They're not playing great hockey as of late. You come out and you impose your will, as we talked about a little bit, and you probably might sweep this California road trip.
Sure. And, you know, LA, worst record in the West, second worst record in the league. Detroit's the only team that has less points, right? And, and you know, I was going, you know, preparing for the show, guys, and, you know, looking at all the numbers. And, you know, when it comes to goals for, goals against, power play, penalty kill, they're either, you know, bottom three, bottom five, bottom 10. Like, if you're a Kings fan, I think you knew that the team wasn't going to be very good this year, but I don't necessarily knew that you thought it was going to be this bad.
They're 25th in the NHL in goals for with 67. Go. This is actually entering yesterday's contest. 26th in goals against with 84. 29th on the power play at just under 12%. And 28th in the penalty kill at just under 74%.
Right.
So, whatever you think of those numbers, when you're at the bottom of the league at all four of them, it's a pretty bad sign for your success.
Right, and they've had trouble scoring goals, as we just talked about. And you know, the goaltending, I mean, I don't think any goaltender, I don't even think Connor Hellebuck could save this team. And obviously, you know, Jonathan Quick's numbers haven't been good. And, you know, Jack Campbell hasn't been very good either, even though, you know, he hasn't been playing nearly as much as Quick, right, Dave? So, yeah on paper, the Jets should win this game. But, I mean, the Kings did beat the Jets in Winnipeg. So you're not going to take this game lightly. Nobody on the Jets is going to take this game lightly, from, you know, the coach down to the players, right? So Lauren Brossoit is going to get an opportunity to, you know, get another start. He hasn't been playing, you know, as much certainly as he was last year at this point. So, yeah, the Jets are going to have to, you know, find a lot of, as much, I should say, gas in the tank as they have left, because, you know, it's been a long road trip. When you talk about, you know, they've gone from coast to coast, Florida to California. They've played a lot of road games here in the last, you know, two and a half weeks.
Mm-hmm. That game in Winnipeg is almost feels like a bit of a road game, because it's such a one-off. You fly in, you play the game. I mean, albeit they're in town in time to do the skills competition, but it's just such a, it's a one-off in the midst of a coast to coast, you know, 8-game road trip, Dave.
Yep. No, absolutely. And the funny thing is, Kings lost last night to San Jose.
Yeah.
So if the Kings would have beaten San Jose, Kings would have 24 points, and they'd be 3 points back of, or 4 points back of a playoff spot in the Pacific.
Well, the parity, Dave, is crazy.
Yeah.
There's no really.
I talked about this before. I said, like, it's crazy how this year, we talked about this last week, how this year there really isn't that drop off where you're having a team that only has, like, in the teens.
Yeah.
Right? So even,
yeah, I mean, Detroit really,
Detroit's
the only
one
team
who has 17 points. Mm-hmm. But everybody else, you know, in theory, look, if the Kings, I'm not saying the Kings are good enough to go on a bit of a run, but if the Kings went on a bit of a run, like I said, had they won yesterday.
Well, you look at wins in regulation.
Yeah.
In the Western Conference, the team that's got the most wins in regulation are the Avs and the Oilers with 12. So it's not like, you're right, Dave, not like these teams are dominating in regulation. There's no team that's a juggernaut, especially in the West. I mean, the Jets now, you know, for a while there, they were only winning in overtime or in the shootout. Now they're up to 10 wins in regulation. The Blues, who are leading the Central, have 11 wins in regulation. The Blues are really atop the Central because they've lost six games in either the shootout or in overtime.
Right.
That's really what's making up a lot of their points as well. So to your point about the parity in the West, it's significant, and that's why you can't overlook any opponent, especially one that's at the bottom of the division.
And this could become a bit of a trap, to Ezzy's point. You know, you just can't afford to take this team lightly and to just look past them and think, okay, well, now we got to focus on, you know, coming back home after
home
what
home.
Has been a really long road trip. So at the same time, you got to finish out strong. You got to, and I, to your point, Drew, and I agree, you got to jump on the team quickly, because I think, you know, I'm not saying LA is going to fold it up and go home. But I think, like, if...
Because they're already home.
Because they're already home, so they wouldn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. They might have to fold it up, though.
Yeah. Well, there's not even a tent to fold up either.
That's true. But they don't have many goals for it, so if you jump on them early, and then it's a team that's hard to, that doesn't score very many, it's a good sign for your team as a road team.
And again, look, the Jets have shown an ability to be able to score, come from behind, you know, even if the other team gets the first goal. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I think it's important for a couple of reasons. One, I think you want to continue that balance. I really think Paul Maurice wants to be able to allow his horses to kind of take a step back and really roll all four lines in theory tonight, because it'll give those guys an opportunity, like Scheifele, like Wheeler, you know, and again, like a player like Wheeler, and don't get me wrong, I mean, we've talked about how good he's played on this streak since he's moved over to the middle, but, you know, he's an older player. Don't want to burn him out in November.
Sure.
It's important to get these points. And we've talked about this. We talked about this in October when the Jets weren't having a tremendous amount of success, how important points were to accrue in the old standings bank. But at the same time, don't want to burn out guys in November. So
if you can win relatively easily in regulation and you play your fourth line upwards of 10 minutes like they were able to do last night and on
that to me is the key.
Wednesday night against San Jose, then you're doubly happy with in addition to the actual victory. When we come back, we look at the standings at U.S. Thanksgiving. We know that that's an important milestone. We talk about where the playoff races are at this point in time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezzie the Wine Gum Ginsburg. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsburg with you. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Los Angeles Kings later on tonight, shortly after 9 p.m. Puck drop with the three-headed monster, Bayak, Munns, Edmonds. You can keep it tuned here all day long to TSN Radio 1290 for your best in sports coverage here in Winnipeg.
Looking forward to the Jets being back in Winnipeg. Like, the Jets have not had more than one home game in the last 3 weeks. Like, it's ridiculous.
They've been on the road for a while. You're right.
And these late games, I mean, you know, I'm in bed earlier now with the two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. I mean, you're burning the midnight oils, Drew. Like, you're partying. You're used to being up at, you know, 10:30, 11. I'm usually in bed by like 8 now.
You are an old man. Thank you for confirming that.
But not just an old man with kids who have needs.
And what about your needs? Why aren't those lousy kids?
It's called sleep, which is why Ezzie's in bed by 8 o'clock.
Once you have kids, your needs don't matter.
It's nice that you realize that. That's good. I know, it's true.
Though.
Of course it is. You have to sacrifice your children. Hey, I've been doing this for a while now. I'm a veteran at this stage of the game. Let's talk about the NHL standings at U.S. Thanksgiving, because of course that's always one of those benchmarks people look at. At the start.
I've never heard
of
that. Is that something like the American Thanksgiving standings?
Is that a relevant date?
80% here. Hang on, hold on tight. I don't know if you're prepared for this. 80% of the teams that are in the playoff spot at U.S. Thanksgiving will make the playoffs at the end of the year. Whoa, mind-blowing.
It's the first time I've ever heard that.
I know, it's hard to believe. I just throw these things at you.
Like, how have we never talked about that? Like, we've been doing the show for like 10 and a half years, almost 11 years. And
first time we've ever talked
about it. Phenomenon that I've never been made aware of.
I know, it's amazing. Isn't it absolutely fantastic?
It's fascinating.
I know. So let's talk about the standings as they currently sit. You know, there are some teams that you would expect to be in a playoff spot that are not currently there. The one that jumps out to me the most, of course, in the Eastern Conference is the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that is not in the playoffs, and albeit a lot of people would point to the fact that they've played fewer games than anybody in the NHL, having only played 22 games so far this season, which is a very low number, which is a bizarrely low number, pardon me, up to 23 now after last night, but 22 entering U.S. Thanksgiving, and they're not yet in a playoff spot. So let's start with Tampa Bay. Any concerns about that, or you think it's all just a function of having played so much fewer games?
Yeah, I think Brian Engblom said it best when we had him on a few weeks back about the fact that this team just hasn't played a lot of games. And I think this team obviously wants to be in the playoff position. They don't want to be doing coasting when you're not above that line. But, you know, their goal differential is plus 10. Mm-hmm. They're a good team. They're a good hockey team. I think that they know that they're going to be there when it ultimately counts. But I mean, at the same time, they're only, you know, before it was five, when we talked to Brian, it was five games behind most other teams. Now they're only three, you know, behind some of these other teams in terms of games played, but you know, they're really not that far back. So I would think that Tampa Bay is one of those teams that's going to climb into a playoff spot. But I have to say, it's weird looking at the Atlantic Division and seeing Boston in first, Florida and Buffalo in second and third, and not seeing Tampa in first and Toronto, Boston fighting for that second and third spot.
Yeah. And if you think about it, guys like Boston and Washington, I mean, they're this year's Tampa Bay, right? Like Boston was up there all year last year, but I agree with you, Dave. I mean, I think most of us expected Florida to either be a playoff team or close to a playoff spot, and they are. Buffalo, I mean, some people did, some people didn't, but Tampa Bay is only a few points back. That's the big thing here. I mean, if Tampa Bay was 5-6 points back, then I would be a little bit more concerned. But you're talking about, you put together 3 wins in a row, 4 wins in a row. Yeah, they're 2 points back, right? And the Leafs are tied with the Sabres, right? The Leafs, I think, there's more to be concerned about there because they just lost 6-4 and they're still giving up a lot of goals. Obviously, Sheldon Keefe has opened it up and you're seeing players like, you know, Tyson Barrie, William Nylander, they're starting to have a little bit more freedom, Dave.
I thought he was going to win every game as Leafs head coach, though. I thought that was just automatic. Yeah. I assume that as soon as you come in as a new head coach, you just win every single game for all eternity.
Like, the team I'm more concerned about is the Montreal Canadiens. Like, I realize a lot of people didn't have the Canadiens, but the Canadiens now, we just talked about it. I mean, like, Tampa Bay's picked up points in 7 of their last 10, right? 6-3-1. So Montreal, like, Tampa Bay has caught up to Montreal. Montreal was in a playoff spot.
Montreal lost 6 in a row now?
They won their last game, but they
yeah, they've only won 3 of their last 10, but they've lost 3 in a row. Yeah,
so they've lost 3 in a row. Yeah.
Right, so like teams like Tampa Bay and Toronto are, you know, neck and neck with them, but, you know, Montreal had a bit of a cushion, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So, you know, the Canadiens are one of those teams where, you know, if they don't get their act together, I mean, it goes back to what, you know, Dave just said. I mean, you expect Tampa Bay and Toronto to be playoff teams just because of the skill on their roster, right? And nothing is a given, but yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Tampa Bay has played 4 less games than Toronto, for example. They've played, you know, 3 less games than Buffalo. So that alone, you got to think, okay, well, if they win 2 of those 3 games, they're in a playoff spot. So not as worried about Tampa, but a team like Montreal, I think, who right now is, you know, like I mentioned, like right up there with Toronto in that division, right up there with Tampa Bay in that, not in that division, in the conference for the wild card spot. I mean, that is a team that I think has maybe missed an opportunity here to maybe keep banking points and stay ahead. But, you know, Tampa Bay and Toronto, I think so far it's been mixed. I mean, you talk about the Jets, you know, 6-7 in the month of October, and then they've been, you know, what are they, 10-2-1 here in November. So now they're firmly in a playoff spot. I mean, a lot can change in a couple of weeks. Look at San Jose, right? Like, San Jose we thought was done. And now San Jose, I think, is still in playoff spot, right? So
it's true. I mean, but the thing about, I mean, you talked about the parity, and we talked about it earlier in this, you know, in this show. You know, the Jets are 10-2-1, but, you know, the other teams that are 10-2-1 reside in their division in the month of
right.
November.
Yeah,
you know, the Dallas Stars,
they
and
don't
St.
lose.
Louis.
Yeah.
You know, so the Jets really haven't gained any ground to speak of on the Blues and the Stars. They've gained ground on the Predators and the Avs, who've struggled a little bit far this
the
month.
The Avs managed to hold their own considering all the injuries.
Absolutely.
Not to say the Jets were injury-free, but you know, considering who Colorado lost. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're still sitting in that third spot in the Central is pretty impressive.
Well, it's Nashville that continues to struggle this month. You know, 3-5-2. They won yesterday, which might get them back, you know, on the right track. But they're a team that, as of U.S. Thanksgiving, which of course was on Thursday, was not in a playoff spot, albeit, you know, close by, you know, only 2 points behind the Vegas Golden Knights for the final wild card spot on Thursday with a few games in hand. But, you know, you look at the teams that are going to drop out. If 20% of the playoff teams on U.S. Thanksgiving are going to drop out, which are those 20% from your perspective?
Yeah, well, let's start with Nashville, because Nashville, to me, doesn't seem like they've got it together at all this year. I mean, it seems like they've been struggling for most of the year, and, you know, they're not out of it by any stretch, but, you know, we just saw the Jets play the Predators. Just something about them, to me, doesn't look the same, and I realize they're having trouble scoring goals, and I still really like their defense. Like, I talked about it at the beginning of the season. Like, I've always liked Dante Fabro's game, like, following him, you know, up to the NHL, and I think that, you know, there isn't as big of a drop-off from P.K. Subban to Dante Fabro. And, you know, we know Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. I mean, these are excellent NHL defensemen. Like, you know, Pekka Rinne, what did he start the season off? 7-1, and he had that crazy
like
save percentage.
65,
right? And he hasn't been very good. And you know, UC Saros hasn't been very good either. So the strengths of their team, defense and goaltending, I think the defense is still fine. I don't think I'm that worried about that group of defensemen, their top six. But the goaltending hasn't been as good. Like, what happened to Kyle Turris?
Like, back to being a healthy scratch. Like,
well,
he was last
like,
year.
Like, what happened to Kyle Turris? You know, like, Matt Duchene has come in and pretty much been what they've wanted him to be. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, this Predators team, you know, with the trouble scoring goals and, you know, some of the issues in goal, I don't know if they're able to pull out of this. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the Jets, the Blues, the Avalanche, the Stars. All of these teams are playing at a high level, and it seems like the Predators have fallen behind a little bit.
And, you know, before, if you fall behind too far, we know how difficult it is to catch up because of the parity. And so, you know, if you're a Nashville team, you know, it's one thing if it's a week worth of struggles, but it's been a, pretty much a month of worth of struggles in November. And you wonder if, you know, how quickly they need to turn that page into the month of December and start their improved play. They got it done yesterday by beating a good Hurricanes team 3-0. But if you're the Predators and you're a fan of the Predators, you're a little bit concerned as at the start of December. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, the only thing you have to factor in also, and it's probably easier, and I don't know if they do this generally with that stat, is based on your points percentage, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think, like, to Ezzie's point, it can be very deceiving when you have a team that's, you know, played four less games, and or like a Tampa, who has all these games in hand. And so if you look at points, like a winning percentage, you know, Tampa's in a playoff spot mm-hmm. in the East. So to me, it's a function of, like, you know, if you look at that and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, that's probably a more realistic barometer of team success. Go and, you know, can be from that, you can extrapolate how the team will likely do the remainder of the year. And then based on that number, are those the teams that you think are going to be in and out, you know, at U.S. Thanksgiving? And I believe it's based just on points.
It right? is. It's not based on point percentage.
But it
or
probably,
anything.
I mean, again, I'd be interested to see, to look back and see it like that. But I mean, if you're asking me the two teams that I think could, that I could see not being
playoff teams.
Yeah. I mean, the Sabres for sure. I didn't have them in anyways. Mm-hmm. And the Florida Panthers are a team, you know, their goal differentials in the negative. To me, that's a team that's primed to be, you know, kicked out of a playoff spot, even though they currently sit there. They're kind of on the cusp with the Lightning right now. So I could, you know, they're at about a 580 winning percentage. But yeah. So Florida's another team I could see falling out.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the teams too that we've talked about, you know, quite a bit, we'll talk with Kristen Anderson coming up, you know, the Flames, you know, they get Ottawa and then they've got, you know, Buffalo next week. They've got LA, you know, a week from now. So they've got some easier opponents, but you know, you have to win those games. Like the Flames can't just win a game or two in a row. They're going to have to go on a little bit of a run. I mean, like Edmonton, Arizona, I mean, these teams have pulling away, right? Mm-hmm. So the Flames are another team. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it because, you know, forget American Thanksgiving. The point is, you know, you don't have as much time to make up those points, right? Like when you're 5 or 6 points back at the end of November, early December, you know, you have to put a winning streak together. And, yep. you know, Calgary, even though they have some easier games, you know, they've won 3 of their last 10. Like just, you know, they just can't seem to get it together. Obviously, there's a lot going on with that team right now.
And we'll talk about the Flames coming up next. But before we go to break, a trade has just been announced. It's got some minor relevance to Winnipeg Jets fans. Eric Comrie is on his way from the Arizona Coyotes to the Detroit Red Wings.
Makes those December games against the back-to-back against the Wings a lot more interesting.
A little bit, exactly. The Red Wings are a team that they've got goaltending. I think they got a goaltender who's injured. I think Bernier is injured and Jimmy Howard's sick or vice versa. They got some goaltending issues. So Eric Comrie is going to go to Detroit, play for the Red Wings in exchange for defenseman Ville Saarijärvi, who I don't know anything about, admittedly.
Well, the Moose actually were just playing Grand Rapids yesterday.
There you go. So Eric Comrie, but he's up at the NHL level, so you have to presume he'd stay at the NHL level mm-hmm. because if he was to go down, well,
remember,
he'd have to clear waivers.
Wings had some injuries.
That's what I'm saying. They have goaltending problems, so Comrie probably going to get a shot, at least in the interim, at the NHL level with the Detroit Red Wings.
It's interesting because a lot of people have already written him off, and to me it's a function of give him an opportunity. If he has an opportunity in Detroit, and we know that that's not a good Detroit team, mm-hmm. but this at least is a bit of an opportunity to play some games in the NHL.
It certainly is. When we come back, we talk about the saga and the terrible week that was for the Calgary Flames organization and for really hockey in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
This morning I received a letter of resignation from Bill Peters, which I accepted. Effective immediately, Bill Peters is no longer a member of the Calgary Flames organization.
That was Brad Treliving, Calgary Flames general manager, yesterday. Sort of felt as though it was inevitable, as it should be. Bill Peters getting dismissed as the Flames head coach, resigning, to be perfectly accurate, as the Flames head coach following a tumultuous week of accusations.
That couldn't have been easy for Brad Treliving, right?
Like, well, did you watch the press conference? He said it in the press conference.
He probably hasn't slept a lot.
He did not look like he slept a lot. He said it in the press conference, it's the hardest week, hardest thing he's ever done in his life. Just a terrible situation all along. And I know that people are saying, well, why it took too long to get to officially have him dismissed as head coach. And there was no way he was ever going to return behind the Flames bench.
I actually thought he was going to be fired on Tuesday.
Well, I mean,
really shortly after all of this news came out. And, you know, Brad Treliving said they wanted to make sure they had all of the information. But the point is the right decision was made. That's really what matters. I mean, yes, you could have argued, Dave, that, you know, this should have happened Thursday or it maybe should have happened Wednesday. But, I mean, they gathered all of the facts. Clearly, you know, Bill Peters' past has come back to haunt him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he doesn't deserve to be an NHL head coach. When you use that type of language and you embarrass a player, and also the physical abuse is almost worse. I mean, they're both bad. You don't want to necessarily.
No, you're not going to rank them.
You don't want to rank them. But I mean, the reality is, Dave, you know, Bill Peters' past, the way he's treated players, both, you know, with the Carolina Hurricanes and, you know, with the Rockford AHL organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sorry. I mean, apologizing, and I didn't like his apology, by the way, and obviously Hakeem Olajuwon didn't like the apology either, but that stuff happens, and it, you know, comes out in the public on Twitter and all that. I mean, sorry, you're going to lose your job for that.
The apology, I'm sure, was crafted by lawyers who said you can say this in the statement.
Sure.
And it was a terrible apology.
Why does everything have to be crafted by, like, well, like, to me, Kent, like, wouldn't it be, like, just admit everything's wrong?
No, here's my point. I agree with you. What I would have said is I wouldn't have even come out with a statement. Don't come out with a statement. Sure. It was inevitable how this was going to end.
Maybe call Hakeem. Apologize.
Sure. I mean, wait. Don't say anything publicly. Eventually you get fired, and then maybe you can come out with a statement that is more genuine and more honest, because that statement absolutely was nothing. There was nothing in there that made you feel as though this is somebody who's legitimately remorseful for his actions. I don't know Bill Peters at all. I would hope, if he's a human, he does feel remorse for his actions, and that statement did not give off that impression whatsoever.
If I was him, or if I was someone advising him, guys, I would say that, you know, you should contact the players, and there might be more players.
There's clearly more players. It's not the nice.
That would, I think, go a long way in his own healing.
Absolutely.
Right? Instead of, you know, releasing these statements from lawyers. Like, I get the role that lawyers play and PR firms and all that.
Don't you hate lawyers, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, to Ezzie's point, though, I mean, I think the reality is, especially from a financial perspective, he knows that whatever he says is probably going to play into how his contract ends with the Calgary Flames.
Right.
So to your point, Drew.
Don't say anything.
Don't say anything. Because you're right. It doesn't come across as genuine. And then people read that. And in today's day and age, it becomes a whole thing. And it becomes this, like, I mean, Twitter can be a complete cesspool at the best of times.
Yeah, can be.
So, I mean, look, Twitter can be a good environment as well. It really depends on how you engage people.
Especially
on it.
If you're live tweeting fire trucks being chased down the street.
Sure, absolutely. But I mean, the truth is, like, look, that was an example of positivity, right? People downtown become alerted to something that they may not have been aware. They may have been coming to look for the latest Jets and Moose news, and instead they
found out. Not only is Dave the Moose insider, he's a crime insider.
Yeah, fire truck insider. Yeah, it was. Look, I mean, obviously Bill Peters did things that are reprehensible, and to your point, as he no longer deserved to be an NHL head coach, and he will not be an NHL head coach anymore, ever again in the NHL. I think it's safe to say.
Can I cut you off for 1 second? Like, people talking about, well, Calgary's record made it easy for Brad Treliving to fire Bill Peters. The Calgary Flames could have been 24-1. They were going to fire him.
You cannot use that language, and you especially cannot use that language in this day and age and expect there to not be ramifications. And
I have to say, though, the Flames not firing him immediately based on the word of one person is the right decision.
I thought the Flames handled it pretty well.
But that's what I'm talking about, this whole Twitter mob mentality where everybody's calling for it. And it's like, well,
they did their due diligence.
And Brian Burke said it. He said, like, look, this is in theory, this could just be a disgruntled player. Turns out it isn't, but you never know. So you have to do your research. You have to find this. You have to talk to the player. You have to talk to other players.
You're not going to fire a coach based on tweets.
I thought the Flames handled a very difficult situation as well as possible.
Right.
The only thing they did wrong in theory was not making Peters available after the Penguins game.
I don't think so. You don't put him out in that situation where.
Well, no. I'm saying if you're not guilty.
Well, but obviously the NHL is a pretty tight-knit community.
That's a fair statement.
If a coach has physically hit a player before, which is what Mikael Jordan alleged that Bill Peters did and then had it confirmed.
Yeah, it's Rod Brind'Amour said it happened.
You have to know that every other team in the league knew that that had happened previously.
Well, and that's kind of goes back to what I'm saying before. Like, this stuff happened. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I realize that some people, Dave, you know, might want like would have liked to have heard from him, or maybe, you know, some people are hoping that, you know, he goes on TSN and he's interviewed by a guy like Bob McKenzie. But to me, I mean,
there's no value.
There's no value there. Like, yeah. He should be reaching out to these players and apologizing. Like, Akeem Liu, you remember, mm-hmm. came out about the hazing incident in the Ontario Hockey League.
Steve Downey, it's famous video.
He's a very brave guy.
With the Windsor Spitfires, he refused to be hazed by the Windsor Spitfires when he was a member of the OHL.
Yep.
Mo Mantha was the team's general manager back at that time.
Former Jet 1.0.
And Steve Downey, who was on the team, Steve Downey and Akeem Liu had a fist fight in practice.
Yep.
The video is a famous video of Downey absolutely destroying Liu because Liu refused to be stuffed into a bathroom on a bus.
Well, and there was also racism that happened on that team.
That team was awful.
Well, and he really came out and he was a trailblazer because he said, you know what, I'm not putting up for this, putting up with this. And it's famous that, you know, there's a good article by Gare Joyce about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like his background and what he had to go through with racism, everything like that. So not only did he go through that in the OHL, you know, he goes through it again at the American Hockey League level. So good for Akeem. And I realize, you know, more stories have come out. And if you follow Daniel Carcillo, I mean, he's posting anonymous stories and, you know, more stories are going to come out. But at the end of the day, on the topic of Bill Peters, for me, the best thing he can do is contact players and sincerely apologize
because he really did ruin
careers. I mean, he has had such a terrible impact on several players' careers. So I think for his own sanity, his own peace of mind,
his own healing.
Yes.
His healing, the players' healing.
But do it off
absolutely.
The grid. You don't need to go in. Like,
that doesn't need to be on TV.
You don't need to go on the radio or on television. Just go in, just in the background. Yeah. Do the reach out, because that's the real genuine. If you need to leak it and let people know that you're doing these things, you're not really doing it for the right reason. If it comes out later by those players releasing it, that's a different story. But just go and apologize to the people that you offended.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, again, you have to reflect on your actions. And it's easy for us to sit here up on our soapbox and tell people what they should do. Nobody's life.
I'm not on a soapbox. I'm on a chair here.
But nobody's perfect. What I'm saying is
nobody
can sit there and say, I've never said anything bad in my life, or I've never done anything bad in my life. So you don't want to be one of those people who's just saying, oh, I'm perfect, but look at over there at that person, because tends to look back at you and realize
bite you in the ass eventually.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to sit here and tell him that he needs to be 100% of a choir boy, but I just think you need to reflect on your actions and hopefully make yourself a better person as a result, but outside the glare of the NHL lights.
When we come back, Kristen Anderson joins us from Calgary to talk more about the week that was for the Flames. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. We are just over 1 month away from New Year's Eve, so if you haven't made your plans yet, remember, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the place to be on New Year's Eve. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media in Calgary, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Flames beat writer Kristen Anderson. Kristen, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's been a long week in Calgary, and I'm sure the Calgary Flames are happy to see that the month is over as well.
No doubt, and we do appreciate that it has certainly been a stressful week, and you know, it really brings to light that what we're doing, for the most part, is a little bit of candy. You know, when you have to talk about these serious world issues, it puts into perspective, you know, the wins and losses of the games are really just that, games, whereas now we're talking about things of racism and abuse and these topics that we don't typically delve into in the world of sports, Kristen. But the Flames, you know, obviously they made the only decision possible that yesterday when they announced that Bill Peters had officially resigned. It was obvious he was never going to be able to return as Flames head coach. Overall, how do you think the Flames organization and Brad Treliving handled the week that was?
Well, there's no, first of all, there's no manual or handbook on how to handle this type of situation. And obviously, Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames has received some legal advice, and I think they followed that legal process to a T. I know that we've spoken to some legal analysts and have kind of received a little bit of background information on what the process would be in a situation like this. And they followed the protocol, I think, as best as they could. And Brad Treliving was really transparent throughout the entire process. As he said yesterday, like, he wanted, there's things that he wasn't going to be able to answer yesterday. There was situations that he wasn't going to be able to shed light on, but he tried to keep us in front of the process and give us as much information as possible. He also realized that people may have criticized him for the process not happening quick enough. I know a lot of people were calling for Bill Peters' head as soon as those tweets came out earlier this week and on Monday. And that's just simply, they had to go through some protocol to gather all of the information necessary to make a informed decision on what to do with the future of head coach Bill Peters. And ultimately, like you said, there was no way that it was going to work out in Calgary. I think after this, we asked the question to Bill Peters or to Brad Treliving yesterday, would Bill Peters coach in the NHL again? And it's tough to say, but and obviously Brad Treliving didn't shed light on that, but yeah, it wouldn't have worked out in Calgary. Like, this is something you can't come back from, especially in the climate that we live in nowadays. It's 2019, and this was only 10 years ago. That's the other thing too, is that it's not like it was 40, 50, 60 years ago. This was 10 years ago. So it opens up so many conversations into the language that people still use in this game, the way that we treat the way that coaches treat their players, and just kind of the way we treat each other. And it's been a bit of a sad week, but I have to say there was some light at practice at the Flames practice yesterday when interim head coach Jeff Ward took over. He had the music playing. There was some, like, a pretty light mood, I would say, in spite of all this darkness that's been happening with the Calgary Flames. So I think that, you know, you can only learn lessons moving forward. It's easier to say that and just kind of, and I'm not saying that just to brush it off, but I think that's the only way you can approach this situation right now if you're the Calgary Flames, is moving forward and learning lessons and that kind of thing.
Well, Christian, you just mentioned Jeff Ward, Flames interim head coach, and, you know, it's nice for him. Maybe the only good thing that comes out of this is his first opportunity to be a head coach, right? Longtime assistant coach, Boston Bruins, actually won a cup with Milan Lucic, former assistant coach of the Devils. But, you know, Jeff Ward, you know, told the media this, and it might have been your question, but he said, you know, we have to just move on. It's been a really tough week, but we have to move on. We have to start with a win over the Senators. Is that all that Jeff Ward and the coaching staff and the Flames can do at this point? Because, as you know, I mean, they're in a dogfight, you know, just to get into the playoffs this year.
It's been a really tough month. This team has gone through a lot, and not just this last week. They had a 6-game losing streak. They haven't been playing great. They had a closed door meeting in St. Louis with players only. Obviously, the scary incident that happened with TJ Brody collapsing at practice and convulsing, and they've had injury problems, and it's just on and on. It's like gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that the best thing for the Flames right now is just to calm the ship. The best thing that Jeff Ward can do is just kind of create a calm atmosphere for this group and a loose atmosphere, and just let them get back to playing, get back to basics, shut out all of that outside noise. And interestingly enough, Jeff Ward has been in this type of situation before in terms of taking over a team midway through a season and trying to incorporate, like, not that you want to instill your own systems or your own culture, but you just kind of assume the ship and keep it steady and keep it above water and keep it just kind of rolling. So I think that, and most recently it was when, during the 2002-2003 season with the AHL, the Hamilton Bulldogs, he led them to a Calder Cup final and received the AHL Head Coach of the Year award that year after that season, after he took over for Claude Julien, who took over for Michel Therrien at the NHL level. So it's experience. He has that type of experience. He doesn't have experience at the NHL level, but like you said, this is the most important thing for this group right now, is just to have a bit of a calmness to their approach right now.
You know, Kristen, I have to ask you about Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau. Yeah, I mean, he had 36 goals, sorry, last season, 99 points. This year he's got 5 goals and 20 points. So what really has been the difference in his play this season versus last?
Well, I think the expectations have risen on Johnny Gaudreau. Like you said, he had 99 points last year, almost 100 points last year, like a really, really good career season, partially due to Elias Lindholm and the chemistry that they were able to develop early on last year. And really, I think Johnny Gaudreau had a bit of a, like, he tapered off as the year progressed last year. I think there was some elements of his game that he was fighting, and you kind of saw that at the start of this year. And it really has been a bit of a struggle for him. I'm interested to see how he does under head coach Jeff Ward. If that alleviates some of the pressure, maybe he just can play a little bit more freely now under the new head coach Jeff Ward. It's tough to say what's going on, Johnny Gaudreau. You know, with Johnny Gaudreau, I think he cares so much about the game. And he's frustrated, and I think that it's just all spiraling. He was a -5 the other night, and it's just been a struggle for him. Like, there's just been a constant, I think, battle, and the more he does, the less he does. And so maybe this may have an effect on the rest of the team in terms of shaking things up. Like, maybe this will be a good thing for Johnny Gaudreau, too, in terms of just playing a little bit more freely.
Kristen Anderson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Los Angeles Kings later on tonight. Kristen, was Bill Peters liked in the Flames dressing room?
It's so tough to say. We in the media, you guys know this, like, we have such a small window into what actually goes on a day-to-day basis. Yes, we observe, and yes, some of us travel with the team, so we can kind of have an insight and see, like, if you're any type of a people person, you can sort of see body language and things like that. And it was really tough to notice. Like, I don't think that I'm sure players, as you do with in life and in your workplace, there's people, you don't necessarily have to like everybody, but you have to work together. So it's really tough to say if you heard about those allegations from Michelle Jordan and Mikael Jordan in Carolina, and obviously what happened with Akeem Olu. Nothing of the sort, even close, to happened with the Calgary Flames. That was one of the things that Brad Treliving sat down with his team and discussed. If there had been any situations that they felt uncomfortable with Bill Peters, and nobody had anything to say about that. So, it's really tough to say. And, there was some tension, I think, between him and the media. I don't think that was a particularly comfortable part of his job with dealing with the media. But it's a Canadian market, so we had to ask tough questions. So there was some, I would say, some tense moments, and especially when the team wasn't doing good and there's a lot of pressure on him. But yeah, it's tough to judge from the outside unless you're actually in the dressing room. I think it's tough to say if Bill Peters had a strained relationship with some of his players.
Now, Kristen, final question here. Just going back to, you mentioned the practice yesterday, and they took over the sound system at the Saddle Dome, and they were playing a little Elton John and a little, Run DMC, Keeping It Light. But just asking, and I know that from reading your article, but going through, something like this, how important is it to have a captain like Mark Giordano and a veteran like Michael Backlund, players like that? Because, the Flames have no shortage of young players. It's kind of a mix on that team. Michael Frolik is another guy that's obviously been around the NHL for a long time. But how important is it to have players like that going through something like this? Because I imagine, a lot of these players are, confused, and there's so much swirling around this team right now.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you bring up Mark Giordano and Michael Backlund, because they've been through a lot, like a number of head coaches since their time with the Calgary Flames. Mark Giordano, just off the top of my head, may have been coached by Daryl Sutter right at the beginning of his career, just, briefly. Then there's Jim Playfair, and then there was Brent Sutter and Mike Keenan, and the list goes on. Glenn Gullitson, Bob Hartley, now Bill Peters, and so you really, I think as a player, you have to adapt a little bit. You have to be flexible. You have to, like Matthew Tkachuk said it best, I think, like, you just have to come to the rink, and every new day is a new day, and you just kind of have to wash off what happened yesterday. And Rasmus Anderson's interesting too, because his dad is the head coach of Malmo, and he's been around it his entire life in terms of coaching. Knows, you know, from firsthand experience, these types of these tense situations and what you can control. You can only control what you can control. That's what he was saying yesterday. Mark Giordano is, you know, such a steady leader. He doesn't get too high or too low. He's, you know, been around for so long. And I think, yeah, that is going to be key. And that's just in his nature. He's just a calm person in general. And I think that that's really going to play into this situation, what the Calgary Flames are dealing with right now. And the music was awesome yesterday. I think somebody said that Mike Keenan played Metallica a number of years ago, but I think this was the first time. I've covered the Calgary Stampeders, and they play music at practice sometimes, but it was great. Like,
did Keenan play, like, was it like Master of Puppets, or was it the Enter Sandman, or
really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know, there's some good bangers, but Jeff Ward was like, yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to happen all the time, but we certainly needed it today.
Kristen Anderson covers the Calgary Flames for the Post Media in Calgary. Kristen, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully the weeks following will be more hockey focused and less societal issue focused.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice for everybody?
Agreed. Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks so much.
Take care. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll take a look at the TSN Radio scoreboard, update you on the Manitoba Moose. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Rolls it over for Koski. He has this puck poked away from him by Chibasov, though. Harkins out in front for Griffith. A quick shot. They score! Seth Griffith just manages to sneak it past Philip Larson, and the Moose have a 3-0 lead here in the second period. Chalk of the win, the Manitoba Moose take a 4-2 victory over the Grand Rapids Griffins.
Our buddy Daniel Fink with the call. TSN Radio scoreboard says the Manitoba Moose were victorious, last night in Grand Rapids. They're in action again tonight. Tonight in Rockford, Dave?
Chicago.
Chicago, and then Rockford on Tuesday?
Yeah.
This road trip has been like three weeks long.
Yeah, it's 7 games. Yeah. It's crazy.
A lengthy road trip for the Manitoba Moose.
Our boy Daniel Fink is picking up some nice air miles.
He for sure is.
Yeah. Anyways, the Moose, good victory last night. Dave, you obviously kept an eye on that game. What can you say about the game last night?
No Sammy Niku. He was a game-time decision, but after the game on Wednesday, the coach decided not to put him into the lineup. So no Sammy Niku, but you know what? And Griffin Outhouse, good for him. First AHL
Hang on, I just have to interrupt. Griffin Outhouse defeated the Grand Rapids Griffins?
Yeah, and I pointed that out last night. I thought that was hilarious. Like, it just kind of dawned on me after the game that a kid named Griffin, even though he spells it with an E, defeated a team named the Griffins. But, you know, good for him.
With an I.
26 saves in the win. So good. He had a nice game. And then
and that's not an easy thing to do, right, Dave? Because, you know, the Moose lost those 2 games against the Marlies.
Right. And
the Admirals, yeah, which are the 2 best teams in the league.
That's right.
Right? So it's a tough situation to come in. You haven't played because Burton is playing all the time. And then you come in and you pick up a big win over Grand Rapids. I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit. And, and you know Griffin's story.
Yeah.
He's got a great story, right? Mm-hmm. Like a good come-from-behind story, right? Mm-hmm. So that was really nice. And obviously, Burton, we expect to be back in for the Moose tonight.
Yeah. And I would expect, you're right, as I'd expect Burton. CJC's got going. He had a couple of goals. So that's good for him. That's the second time in his career that he's had a multi-goal game. And
how about Jansen Harkins? As his number one fan.
Yeah. He's two assists last night.
Hold on. So you mean I'm his number
one
fan?
That's what I meant. Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
And actually, it's interesting.
Jansen has absolutely no idea who I am.
Sorry. I misspoke.
I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, he's got a preemptive restraining order against
him.
Well,
I mean, I don't think it's going to happen necessarily, you know, in the foreseeable future, but I think he's definitely earned a look from the Jets, Dave. Like,
oh yeah,
like he's what, second in the league in scoring?
That's right.
Third in the league.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because the guy who's first is Chris Terry, who plays for Grand Rapids, had an assist on the second goal for Grand Rapids, which elevated him. Jansen Harkins actually had the puck with 3 seconds left on an empty net and put it into the empty net, but the time had expired. So he'd actually be tied with Terry for first overall in scoring. So again, we've talked about him before, but Harkins is just on a very impressive run. I mean, the kid he realized what he was. He was a center. He moved to the wing. Then he went to the ECHL, had to play some games there, kind of reevaluated his game. Really determined, really driven kid. I saw it last year at the second half of the season. And it's interesting because I've talked to him, you know, in between, I said, did you change anything? He goes, no, my routine is the same, and he's a very regimented kid. He's very intense about his post-game workouts, and the guy is extraordinarily focused. And I really think he's going to be a nice, I mean, again, he's a second-round pick from 2015, and we talk about that 2015 draft class all the time, mm-hmm. but he's just a kid who just continues to late develop and develop into what could be a nice prospect for the Winnipeg Jets.
There you go. There's your Moose update, courtesy of our Moose insider, Dave Minuk. And that's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests. We had Kristen Anderson on. We were joined by John Rosen, Dennis Bayak, and Marty Biron. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on TSN1290.ca. It's on IllegalCurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, subscribe us, review us, tell us what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.